BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Gang, it's Stacey Dooley here with another Fresh Start. This is the podcast from BBC Sounds and Radio 5 Live that highlights impressive individuals who are embarking on a different chapter in their lives. Huge thanks to every single person who's been in touch about last week's episode, actually, which featured Ben and his house share with 85-year-old Wendy, especially to Janet, who says, "Wonderful to hear you talking to my grandson." Oh my, it's Ben's nan. He took me on a coach tour at 83. What an experience. "We follow all your programmes, Stacey." That's so kind. So happy he got to speak to you. I love him. She's put PS, I don't understand tennis rules either. Janet, you and me both. I never will. Thank you for listening. And your grandson, Ben, was just magic. It was a great episode. We've also had this email in from Dave. "My fresh start hit in 2017. Went to work in the US for 3 months, and during that time I met a wonderful lady. Took the plunge, moved to America shortly before my 50th birthday. We're now married and I became a dad to my stepdaughter." This is beautiful. "The leap of faith has been well worth it." And that's it, innit? Dave, look at you, what a fresh start. Congratulations. This is so lovely. This is from Maya, who's 12. "Hi, Stacey. I absolutely love your podcast and it has inspired me in my everyday life." Oh, Maya. "My favourite episode was Shelley, the hijabi cabbie. She is really an inspirational woman. I thank you so much for this podcast and I hope it goes on for many more series." Maya, me too. Thank you. That is a really beautiful message. If you're going through your own fresh start, tell us all about it. Email stacey@bbc.co.uk or you can use the hashtag Stacey Dooley Podcast. If you've missed any of the previous episodes, they're all there, they're all available exclusively on BBC Sounds. Now, today's a bit different because we are talking to you from an actual radio studio. We've finally taken the leap, taking it seriously. I've been standing in for Laura Whitmore on 5 Live today, and so here I am behind a proper microphone rather than shouting into my laptop in my lounge. And guess who's alongside me? It's only my beautiful producer, one of my faves, Blanca. How are you?
I'm all right, baby.
B, this is the last episode in this series. We are racing through these episodes. What a treat it's been to hear from all of our freshers.
I know, it is always amazing, to be honest. You know, I mean, from our wonderful twins, Paul and Richard in Wales, remember,
which, love the twins.
Our episode one, and then all the way through to today's fresher. We can't thank our guests enough, really, for allowing us to tell their stories, but also to keep us going through this year that we've been on air, Stacey.
Absolutely. And Blanca, a massive thanks to you because you work so incredibly hard behind the scenes. You and Chezzy, really appreciate it. And thank you, you know, Blanca sort of touched on it there, for trusting us to tell your stories, our freshers. It is such a great gig. And B, you could be starting your own fresh start soon.
I don't know, it's so scary to think about it. You know, it's so funny because actually this year that we've been following other people's fresh starts, you know, and you think, yeah, okay, they're so brave. But then when it is you, it is quite frightening, isn't it? But I have to say, without sounding cheesy, you know, it is giving me a bit of like that push that I needed. And I'm just thinking about maybe coming back to Spain.
I mean, I adore you, but actually I don't mind you being in Spain. Because then I can just sit on back and forth then, can't I, every couple of months?
Exactly, just come and dance a bit of Roomba with Kev, please.
Duty-free shopping, exactly. Actually, this could work out quite well.
Wish me luck.
Oh, I don't want you to go, but I do, but I don't. But anyway, fresh starts all over the place. Right, on to today's fresher. And we couldn't think of anyone better to close out the series because this is a fresh start that's been over 10 years in the making. Now, Jeanette's story sounds like something from a film. She was in foster care in Derby, left school at 16. And then fast forward 20-odd years, she's now a practicing barrister. That's all I'm going to say for now, because actually I want her to sort of tell her own story. So this is our fresher, Jeanette, who I went to meet in one of the legal hubs of London. She's brilliant. Enjoy. Hiya.
Good afternoon.
I'm here to see a lady called Jeanette Stevenson.
Yep, you're on the third floor, room 7.
Perfect. Okay. Am I right to make my way up there?
You are indeed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, I'm out of breath, Jeanette.
Oh, gosh, I know those stairs are a killer.
I've got to sort it out. I've honestly got to sort it out. Lovely to see you. Thank you for today.
Oh, thanks for inviting me.
This is my first time in Middle Temple.
Yeah, Middle Temple.
Tell me where we are. Tell me why this place is so important.
So, Middle Temple is an inn of court within Temple in London, which I suppose, for those that don't know, it really is sort of the legal part of London, hidden behind grand gates just near the Royal Courts of Justice off Fleet Street.
I've never been
here. I know. And what do you think of it?
It's so grand, isn't it? It's so impressive. It's a bit like Hogwarts.
It is. It definitely is. In fact, when I first came to Middle Temple and I sat there of an evening, sat with a gown on with lots of judges and lords and ladies and the like, I thought I was in the Harry Potter scene, literally. It's quite overwhelming.
It's just enormous. And then I thought, I'm wearing trainers. I had a beanie hat on and everyone's immaculate and like suited and booted. Floor to ceiling bookcases, exactly what you would imagine. So actually, arguably, I should have come a bit more... A bit proper.
A bit more prepared.
Should have got the iron out. Talk us through your fresh start.
Well, my fresh start is I've been a barrister since about 2012, which meant that I'd finished all the examinations and that element of it. But I wasn't able to actually practice. You have to do what's called a pupillage and, you have to do that before you can actually go to court. For various reasons, over the last few years, I wasn't able to complete the final part, I suppose, of the qualifying. I had an ankle accident and stuff like that. But now my fresh start is I'm in court every day with my wig and gown, I'm practicing from London Chambers and, I've finally been able to get that fresh start that I've been waiting for.
Gee, so this has been a long time coming.
Yeah, definitely. It took me about 10 years to actually get there, basically, yeah. Some ups and downs, blood, sweat and tears, but yeah, eventually I'm here and I'm practicing and I'm representing people and hopefully doing really good work.
Worth it?
So it depends what day you ask me. I'm not posh. I'm not from any public school. And there's still sometimes that, as a barrister attached to that you must be from a privileged background. And if you're not, you don't know what you're talking about, So sometimes it's made me question my ability, and question myself for days and made me really down in the dumps. And then other days, you're a fantastic day. I've had a brilliant day this morning. And I've literally changed somebody's life. When you have really difficult, complex cases and you think, what the bloody hell am I doing? Why on earth is somebody trusting me with their blooming life and their case? Do I really know what the hell I'm doing? And sometimes, that imposter syndrome can creep in when you're from a different background.
Yeah.
But, you've got to try and keep that confidence. And this morning proved that, yes, you do know what you're doing, Jeanette.
Of course you
have
do.
Have more faith.
You leave the court case and you've very kindly come to have a chat with us. You've got your gown here. You've got your wig on the table in a Tupperware box. So is it typical to have a tin for these wigs?
My first day in court, really, when I needed a wig and gown, well, the plumbing don't come cheap. I think the wig was about £700. The gown's about £500 or something.
This was 700 quid?
Yeah, they set you back a bob or two.
What's it made out of?
So it's horsehair. Although apparently you can get vegan ones now. I'm not really sure what they're...
Am I allowed to pick it up?
Yeah, pop it on, Stacey.
Oh, God,
it feels a bit strange, doesn't it? So, yeah, you can get these wig tins. So they're very fancy and you have your initials, JLS, mine would be.
Oh.
Not after the pop band. Of course, so, I'm in the shop looking at what I can afford and, would madam like one of these tins? Oh, how much is that thing? He's going to say like 50 quid. Yeah, it was about 500 quid. I was like, you're joking, aren't you, mate? I thought, I'll get a Quality Street tin and pop it in there.
What, 500 quid for a tin?
I know, yeah. So, yeah, as you can see, it's looked after in Tupperware with my name on there in permanent marker.
Brilliant, with the Sharpie.
Yeah.
It does the trick, doesn't it?
Exactly. What more can you want?
And this is your gown.
That's it, yeah.
Do you remember how you felt the first time you put this gown on?
I can remember, walking down Middle Temple Lane in all my glory. Yeah, I was very proud. Yeah, it was fantastic.
This architecture is so stunning. We are basically walking through an enormous outside landing with loads of
it's like arch
beautiful
race,
arches.
Isn't it?
The Da Vinci Code was actually filmed in that church.
It? Yeah, that's pretty cool. You can just imagine years gone by, obviously there's a lot less paper cases now, but when everything was, you know, on paper, you could see at about 5 o'clock at night all the young clerks running round with just masses of paper delivering them to the court and
for their cases.
To the chambers for the cases the next day. So here's the Goldsmith building.
This is where you studied?
This is where I did my last part of my training not long ago. Where they filmed Silk, and if you have a Google of Silk, you'll no doubt find a photograph of Maxine Peake, the actress.
Oh, from the television series.
Yeah.
Yes.
You'll see her just leaning against the railings there, having a fag after a bad day in court.
Well deserved, I'm sure.
So, yes, it was quite surreal when I got a place there, and it was just a really fantastic achievement, really, to, you know, finally qualify.
Is it true that they filmed a couple of scenes for Bridget Jones here?
Yeah, so Middle Temple, which is my...
my contribution to...
Never mind Charles Dickens and all that sort of thing. Middle Temple, my Inn of Court, you'll recognise it from the Bridget Jones's films. In fact, in the corridor was where Mark Darcy actually proposed to her. It's pretty cool.
I never really fancied Mark Darcy.
No.
I can see Colin Firth is handsome, but Mark Darcy was a bit straight-laced for me.
Yeah, he was a bit dull. I thought the other guy was a bit nicer.
The wrong decision. Oh, I could, yeah, I could work here. I could put up with these surroundings, I reckon. What was your childhood like?
A rocky one, I suppose. My first memories really probably when I was sort of 7 or 8, living with my mum and dad at the time.
In Derby?
Yeah, in Derby. I'd got 2 older brothers, a younger sister, and then my mum was soon to have my youngest brother. Unfortunately, when I was about 8, I recall my mum having a conversation with us that unfortunately she'd got breast cancer and she suffered with this for a few years. We had to have the help of social services and things like that. My younger brother, baby brother, was born by this time, which was a difficult time. It was very premature and he had to go into foster homes and we had to, on occasions where mum was in hospital for a long period. And then about a month or so, a couple of months before my 10th birthday, we had the news that there was nothing more that they could do. So my mum died in the January. In the November, she got married to my dad, so she'd never actually married him, which I think back to it now and I think it was a happy occasion, but also, you know, it was obviously such a sad occasion at the same time. And I was a bridesmaid with my sister. And unfortunately, a couple of months later, she passed away. And I can remember going to see her in hospital for the last time. And then, of course, there was 5 of us, so he's going to look after 5 children. And unfortunately, at that time, my dad had developed issues with alcohol. Mm-hmm. He didn't hold down a job. You know, we were on benefits, lived in a council house. And there was just no way he could look after us. So we all had to be split up, basically. My 2 older brothers went to live with my grandma and granddad. I was fostered by my auntie and uncle, you know, one side of Derby. And then my sister, who was 4 years younger than me, she was adopted by another auntie and uncle. So, you know, we were split up. We were close sisters and siblings and just completely split up overnight. And then my younger brother, baby brother, who was sort of what he was about 1 by this time, he was adopted and moved to Birmingham in Dudley. So he's a Brummie now.
Got the accent.
Proper Brummie accent. We're watching it.
Oh, so you're still in contact with your siblings?
Yeah, still in contact, yeah. But, you know, my life changed overnight.
And you're 10.
Unfortunately, I didn't really see much of my dad. As we were growing up, before my mum passed away, there was issues in the house with domestic violence because of his alcoholism. Mm. As you can imagine, my mum's family, who now, I suppose, were in charge of what happened to us, obviously didn't really want us to have anything to do with them. I can remember him phoning the house sometimes and it not really being a very welcoming phone call. And then 2 years later, he passed away. And that was that. Mm-hmm. So I was 12 and was an orphan, really. I'd not got no parents.
What were your main caregivers like?
Yeah, so my auntie and uncle, I went to live with them. They, at that time, I think they were about 30. So, you know, when I turned 30, it really made me think what a massive commitment it was for them. Do you know what I mean? And, you know, I'd be thankful to them for the way I've turned out and everything to this day. I got my head down at school. I did really well at school. I was really good at sports. I was really good at drama. I was in the local community theatre at the Playhouse. I did hockey for Derbyshire. You know, I really threw myself into school and studies. But as I started to sort of turn 15, 16, I rebelled a bit against them. And that's not necessarily their, you know, nothing they did.
It's your formative years, right?
Yeah.
And you've got this massive gaping hole.
Yeah.
Both your parents are dead.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. And I think at that point as well, and again, no disrespect to them, but they'd obviously had plans before I joined them to have their own family and stuff. So by this point, they'd got two boys, so they'd got their own children. And just naturally, because I was a teenager, I felt like I was pushed out. I didn't really feel welcome. I felt unhappy. So I made the decision when I was 16 that I'd leave, basically, and that's what I did.
Where did you go?
So I was going out with an older man at the time.
Well, we've all been there, yes. Isn't it? Yes.
Perhaps one of the reasons they weren't very happy. And yeah. And
I'm out of here. Where are you going, can I ask? Don't you worry.
Yeah. Were you there?
Legit me.
You know, that was sort of the thing. I got a flat basically in Derby City Centre, got my own place, got a job. Done some right dodgy jobs over my time, you know, in those first sort of few years.
Talk me through some of those jobs.
Oh, God, bloody hell. So, like, I worked behind, like, a counter at, like, a really dodgy clothes shop. Probably most of them were counterfeit, you know, that sort of thing. I worked, you know, behind bars and stuff, which is fine. I did that later on in life. But I made glasses at Specsavers. So I worked in the lab there making people's glasses. Yeah,
done it all.
Loads of random stuff, honestly.
You'll pay the bills, didn't you? You know?
Well, I've got no idea what I want to do, really, to be honest. And then, yeah, I began to think that I wanted to work in the police, and that's what I ended up doing for a few years.
Where do you think that came from?
Unfortunately, there were occasions where my dad would kick off and I'd, as a child, have to call 999, you know. That happened quite a few times. So, of course, who would turn up but the police? Mm. So, obviously, the police would make everything okay, you know, and make everything go quiet again. And, you know, I looked up to police officers. Mm. So I think that's where it came from. I wanted to help other people. That's what I did.
How were you as a police officer?
You know, I absolutely loved the job. It was great. I worked sort of on one of the most difficult beats in Derby, an area called Pear Tree. Lots of different cultures and lots of different languages and that sort of thing. Lots of different community issues within different communities. So it was really challenging. And I actually picked to go and work on that beat, actually, because when I lived with my parents, literally Pear Tree Police Station was at the top of our street. My dad had spent a fair few nights in the cells there, so yeah.
It sounds like you had a pleasant experience being part of the police force. Why did you decide to take the leap and become a barrister?
The more that I worked in the police, I realised I was actually quite interested in the legal side of things. Because obviously, as a police officer, you're applying powers and the law every day. But I was more interested in how these laws came about and who decides them and that sort of thing. So I suppose I'd got a more in-depth interest in the laws I was applying, if you see what I mean. So I decided, I'd quite like to go to university. But at that time, I hadn't got a clue how I was going to do that because one, I hadn't got A-levels and two, really, I needed a full-time wage. I hadn't got a penny to rub together, really. And what happened from there, and the reason why I ended up doing a law degree, is I was reading my local newspaper, the Derby Telegraph.
I love this story. Yeah, go on.
I suppose it's right place, right time, really. And I saw this advert. It was a competition. It was called Degrees of Success. In partnership with Derby University, we're giving a reader the chance to go and study a degree of their choice, didn't necessarily have to be law, for free. Well, we know how expensive degrees are. And I thought, that sounds right up my street. And if you'd been at full-time education for more than 5 years, you could apply. So I thought, well, why not?
You've got to be in it to win it, haven't you?
Exactly. So I filled in my application, didn't really think more of it, to be honest. And to my surprise, I was invited to like an interview with a panel of judges. I'd got a daughter by this point. So I think my daughter, Helen Louise, she was about 6 months by then or something like that. So, of course, I almost blackmailed them because I did them like this little folder with all my certificates and my achievements. And then right at the back was a big, massive photograph of her, like with her cheesy smile, you know, mummy or whatever. So I was like, you've got to give it me, you know, for my daughter.
I need to be able to buy her some rusts.
Yeah. Later on that day, I received a phone call to say that I'd won the competition.
Oh,
and
my God.
Did I want to do a law degree?
Jeez, Jeanette.
And I tell you what's even funnier about that story is I went straight from my interview to Derby Crown Court, actually. One of my family members was actually on trial for something at the time. So I'd gone along to support them. And it was miscast of justice, by the way. Anyway, I'd gone along to support them and my phone was ringing. So I quickly nipped out to the toilet and, was told that, yes, you know, would you like to do this law degree? Oh. You know, you want to become a barrister? And I was like, great, thank you. And then just as I got that phone call, the family member got found guilty and sent to prison. I thought, well, right then.
Juxtaposition.
You can't make it up.
You can script it. I know, that's life, isn't it? Yeah. Real life is completely bonkers and sometimes makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. So then you started studying at uni.
Yeah. Well, I think this was about the June time or something like that. Of course, the university year starts in September. Mm-hmm. And in the July time, when obviously I've left work, I'm getting ready to go to university, I find out I'm expecting my second child. Yeah, well, that was a bit unexpected. And it was funny because after that, all my friends and family were saying, blimey, that timing, Jeanette. Oh, I'm so sorry. You was really looking forward to going to university. And I was like,
assuming that you weren't going to continue.
Assuming I wasn't going to go. And I was like, what's unlucky about it? What are you talking about? Well, you're not going to go to university now, are you? You know, you've got a 6 months old child and you're expecting. I said, too bloody right, I'm going to university.
For the more reason.
Exactly. So I went to university full time in the September. My daughter was 9 months old and I think I was 2 months pregnant by then. So my whole of my first year, I just got gradually fatter and fatter and fatter and was known as the pregnant one. Don't think anybody actually knew my name. Came to the end of my first year. It finishes about May, had first year law exams. I actually went into labour during my last exam.
You went into labour taking your last exam?
Yeah, my waters didn't break because then that would have been quite embarrassing. Can you imagine? I sat there in a bloody puddle in the hall, but I'd started having contractions. But I worked out that on this chair that I was sat, which you can imagine there's really hard chairs like you have at school.
Yes, I know exactly what you mean.
I worked out that if I moved from one bum cheek and sat on that for 5 minutes and then moved over to the next bum cheek, I could just about put up with the pain. So I finished my exam.
Did you pass?
Got a B plus.
No,
yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I went straight to hospital, had the baby.
Handed the paper in and then went straight into hospital?
Yeah, went straight to hospital, had the baby. A few hours later, Anthony. I was at home before midnight, having done an exam with my newborn baby and a bucket of fried chicken.
You earned every drumstick. Is it true that you were a participant, a contributor on a game show?
Yes.
To try and get some of the money you needed to get you through your course?
Yes. Yeah, funny story. So of course, I got my scholarship for my law degree. Obviously, you've heard about that. And then after you've done your law degree, you have to go, if you want to become a barrister, you have to go and do bar school for a year, which was at Nottingham. But there's no loans for that. You know how if you want, you can get undergraduate loans, student loans from the government. But if you want to do postgraduate, at the time when I did it, there was no funding whatsoever for the barrister's course. I applied actually to Middle Temple, where we're sat now, and I applied for a scholarship. Every year they give out millions of pounds to people like me. And I was interviewed probably either in this very room or something similar. Quite intimidating room, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it just feels incredibly formal.
Yes, and that's exactly how it felt when I was interviewed. And I was interviewed by a criminal judge and two criminal QCs.
Perfect.
Who I can only describe just absolutely grilled me for like an hour.
There's nothing worse. Oh, you know when you start to feel clammy and then you get like a rashy neck?
Oh, yes, I think sweat was dribbling down from my forehead.
Yep.
And afterwards, I went out into, I don't know if you saw the fountain out there on the way in, and I just sat there and burst out crying. And I phoned my husband at the time and I said, if they give me any money, then they're stupid. Because I felt like I'd answered every question wrong. I felt like I'm not privileged enough to do this job. What the hell am I doing here? And I thought, great, that's it. My dream's over. And that's how I felt. Well, actually, it turned out I did get a scholarship.
Of course you did.
Yeah.
Smashed it.
So I got a scholarship, but unfortunately I was a little bit short. I was about £4,000 short. I didn't have the full amount because I needed some help for childcare and things. Well, I'm sat at home thinking, how the hell am I going to get £4,000? And I was literally sat at my computer Googling. I mean, you don't want to know some of the results that came up.
I was going to say, I use my imagination.
Yeah, use imagination for that one, Stacey. And then all of a sudden, I thought to myself, you know what? I could go on like a TV program or something. So I started Googling, you know, be on TV and all this business. And I came across this TV program.
You're so resourceful.
I know. Yeah. Well, I don't even know what came about me at the time, but I was that desperate to, you know, get the money and but it's like finish my dream.
You're so pragmatic. It's like, right, I'm 4K short. How can I find 4K? You know, yeah. Like so hands-on, so like, right, there's a problem, I've got to get it sorted.
And that's it. I thought, you know, well, I'm not giving up now. So came across this TV programme called Minute to Win It.
I've never heard of this.
Yeah, well, only because they only made one series. It was that bad.
No, rubbish. Because you cleaned them out.
Yeah.
You took all the money.
And it was on ITV2.
Right.
And a very bizarre programme. I like to describe it, it's a bit like, you know, The Cube with Lips Go.
Oh, I've done that.
But, oh, have you?
Well, I ended up having a row. No, don't. It's so cringe. I ended up sort of semi-kicking off because it was me and my boyfriend. And he was saying, Stacey, you're not going at the right time. And I was like, no, Kev, I am going at the right time. You're not getting the 12 right. So we're having a bit of a domestic in The Cube.
Lovely.
Yeah.
But. Well, I like to describe it as, you know, this basically you do stupid games, don't
yes.
you, right? Well, Minute to Win It was even more stupid.
Good evening and welcome to Minute to Win It. Two teams of friends.
It was five of us. Our team captain was Joe Swash. Yeah,
yes,
yeah, yeah. We were against another team on this episode. Their team captain was the late Caroline Flack.
Oh, lovely.
So lovely she was. I remember when I met her for the first time, introduced myself and I apologised to her in advance because I was about to whoop her arse. She took it very well.
I understand, Caroline. I need 4K.
Exactly. So,
completely
yeah.
Fair enough.
And we did completely and utterly whoop their arse. So
you won.
Yeah, yeah, we won. We were a netball team. And we beat a bunch of scientist geeks. Yeah. So, and we won £20,000.
And there were five of you. So that's perfect.
£4,000 each. Yeah. Four it was the absolute
20.
Amount that I needed.
Jeanette, well done.
It was dead good. I couldn't believe it though, honestly. And for that amount as well, it was almost like it was meant to be.
Right.
But at one point, I did have to tell Joe Swash off because he was messing around a bit. And I said, come on, Joe, sort it out. I need this 4K.
He pulled
his socks up after that, you know. And if it hadn't been for that, I probably wouldn't have been able to afford to go to bar school. It's so difficult to better yourself and do postgraduate study when you don't have any money. I mean, I think things are better
therein
now.
Therein lies the problem, isn't it? That's why traditionally only certain sections of society have managed to infiltrate certain spaces.
Exactly, especially, you know, at the bar, even now. There are people that do manage to come from less traditional backgrounds and, you know, they've really worked hard to get there, but still more can be done to make these sorts of professions more accessible to people that don't come from the usual traditional backgrounds. Mm.
You have achieved such an incredible amount. Do you ever take time to, I'm sort of embarrassing you now, but do you ever take time to just stop and think, you know, it could have gone in such a different direction for you.
Yeah, no, it definitely could have gone in a different direction. It has gone in a different direction for other people that have found themselves in similar situations to me. But I've always had a particular mindset, even sort of through my teenage years, after I'd got over my stroppy years, that my mum would have been told at some point in her life, when she'd got five children, and I've reached that age now as well, I couldn't imagine ever being told that you're not going to survive.
Days are numbered, yeah.
And you've got those children and not see them grow up, but not be there to look after them, be responsible for them, ensure that nothing happens to them, that they grow into good people, they get a good education, they get good jobs. So I always had the mindset that, you know what, my mum's not here, but I'm going to do it without her. And I think that's why I've just plodded on.
Persevered.
And there's been such difficult times that I've been through, but Did it for my mom?
This is such a cheesy question and such an obvious question. But what do you think your mum would make of where you are?
You know, everybody says that, you know, she'd be so proud of you and stuff like that. And some people often say that I'm quite like my mum because I'm quite stubborn.
It's a useful trait. You need that sometimes.
Exactly. So, in fact, when it was the 20th anniversary of her passing away, which probably about 10 years ago now, it goes so quickly, I wanted to do something to remember her. And I actually trained to do the white collar boxing match because I thought, well, what can I do that's really brave and completely out of my comfort zone? And I thought, get beat up.
Voluntarily.
Yeah. So, yeah, I trained to do that. And actually, I was quite good at it. She's still here with me. And, you know, I sometimes do things like that to remember her.
I mean, your fresh start is so exciting. It's so important. You've been a barrister for a very long time, but you are now a practicing barrister working solo off the back of the pandemic. Is that correct?
Yeah. So I qualified. So I did actually start to practice. And then unfortunately, I had a very bad ankle accident.
Nothing straightforward, is it?
I know.
I couldn't believe it.
You know, it took me 10 years, blood, sweat and tears. And then all of a sudden, I'd just really getting into my career and I had this bad ankle accident just before the pandemic and sort of through the pandemic that really I couldn't practice because we run from one court to another, we're jumping on trains and, you know, we've really got to be sort of fit and active really. And I couldn't walk. I literally couldn't walk for so long. Now, hopefully, I've put that behind me and I'm back on my feet and I've just joined a new chambers. I'm getting out there and I'm doing the job that I've worked so hard for. So a fresh start after my ankle fusion.
We love to see it. We love to see it.
Yeah.
Another personal fresh start.
Yeah.
Just recently got married.
Yes, for the second time.
Congrats.
Hopefully this one's better than the first.
Congratulations.
Are you joking? We got married on the 18th of November to Richard. So been together for, you know, about 8 years now. He's the stepfather to my children. Yeah, he's a great guy. So another fresh start.
He must be so proud.
Yeah, I think he is. Yeah.
And the kids, what do they make of what you do for a living?
They're very proud, actually. I can remember I was playing Cluedo over Christmas and my son beat me and he just shouted at the top of his head, "I beat a barrister," you know, and I'm thinking, blimey, yeah. And no, they're always telling me how proud they are. And it's great because, you know, I've worked hard and, you know, I've set an example for them. They know what I went through to get here. They've been through a lot as well, supporting me. When I did my pupillage year in London, I had to leave them in Derby. So that was awful.
I suppose, yeah, because they've got school and, you know, their lives are up there.
Exactly. So they lived with their dad and I couldn't get back every weekend. So I couldn't blooming afford the train fare for one. And I just, at the time, I felt like the most awful mother in the world. I missed my son's birthday for the first time because it fell midweek and I was so upset about that. And on Mother's Day, my daughter wrote me a card to say, "Happy Mother's Day, Mummy. I sit on my bed and cry because I miss you." And I thought, oh my God, I'm the worst mum in the world. You know.
When you're a working mum, you're forced to make sacrifices, aren't
exactly,
you?
Exactly. And it's all worked out for the
you're
the
a brilliant
still,
role model.
We're still
for them.
Close.
Of course.
But, you know, so, yeah.
Jeanette, there will be people listening thinking she is such a trooper. What she has managed to achieve is so bloody impressive. What would your advice be to anyone thinking about dipping their toe in, perhaps too frightened to really believe that they can carve a career out for themselves, especially when they feel like they don't belong?
I think the key is to believe in yourself. And I know that can be so difficult, but anything's achievable for anybody, I think, with the right mindset. And I think if you're determined, it doesn't matter how you get there. It doesn't matter what route you take, as long as you get there. You know, it's a marathon, not a sprint. So I think sometimes these days, especially with younger people, you know, with social media and all this business of, you know, they think that they have to live a particular life. They think they have to look a certain way. They have to do a certain thing. You've got all your life to achieve your dreams. Mm. Just stay determined, stay true to yourself.
And that's hard though, isn't it? Because there must be this temptation to conform because I'm not for a second comparing my career to yours because what you have done is astonishing. But I started doing telly when I was 19, 20. Mm. There was a real temptation to sort of talk in a slightly different way or, you know, pander to prejudices. But actually, it really takes a lot not to.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. You've got to be yourself. And, yeah. You know, that's why people love you. You know, that's why you've had such a great career, because you are you. When I went for my first dinner in hall here, obviously in that grand environment, everybody really was speaking quite posh. Yeah. You know, there was lords and that sort of thing. And for about 10 minutes, I didn't open my mouth because I thought, gosh, my Derbyshire accent, all right, me duck.
It's beautiful, your accent.
But that's the thing, isn't it? Like you say about the pressures to be a particular way, and especially in my environment at the criminal bar, I thought, you know, you can't be a barrister unless you speak a particular way, and if you're posh and stuff like that. Well, actually, I met this lovely QC called Anne Williams, who's a Benger of this inn, and she said, no, me duck. She said, you be true to yourself, you've got a great accent, and you be you. And you know what? From that moment on, I'm me. I don't, you know, I don't speak posh. I'm me, basically. A girl from Derbyshire.
Who's done extremely well. She's going to smash this fresh start. How do you do it all?
Oh, I've no idea, honestly.
A mum, a wife, keep going. A barrister. Great company. You have been a total delight. Thank you so, so much for your time. A real pleasure to meet you. Very best of luck with every single thing you do going forward.
Thank you.
I think you're ace.
Thank you, Stacey.
That was the amazing Jeanette, and her story is just one of, you know, sheer determination, I think. And what I love about her is she didn't want to be defined by what's gone on previously. You know, she hasn't let anything sort of get in the way. She didn't have her parents around, she didn't have any money, you know, she was up against it a handful of times. No problem. You know, she's going to go on a game show. She's so resourceful. And after 10 years of graft, she's a fully practicing barrister. Yes, she is. Wishing you all the luck in the world with your fresh start, Jeanette. Thank you again. Right. Oh, I can't bear it. That is it. That's the end of this series. No crying. We will be back later in the year with some more fresh starts on BBC Sounds. Keep an eye out, please, across social media for more details. We've already started recording series 4, and I can promise you there's plenty more brilliant freshers on the way. If you're starting your own new chapter, please tell us all about it. Email us, stacey@bbc.co.uk, or you can use the hashtag StaceyDooleyPodcast. This has been a Little Dooley production for BBC Sounds and Radio 5 Live. Thank you so much to my producers, Blanca, my angel, who's sat here with me now, Blanca Munoz, Chesi Bent, Natasha Johansson, and Maya Lowison, who has helped us out with the social vids. But mainly, I don't want to get too soppy, but thank you so much for sticking with us on Fresh Starts. Stay safe, look after yourselves, and we'll see you soon. Lots of love.
Hello, I'm Jamie Lang.
And I'm Spencer Matthews. And we're here to tell you about our podcast, where our mission is to reach a celebrity and find new friends. It's like Pass the Parcel, with no parcels, just friends of friends.
We are living proof that you don't need an address book the size of Mount Everest to do a podcast like this. You just need some well-connected celebs.
Let's call Rihanna.
Tyson Fury.
Daniel Craig.
Bear Grylls.
Who do you think we will snatch next?
6 Degrees from Jamie and Spencer.
Only on BBC Sounds.